As this year's climbing season begins on Mount Everest, the mountaineering world mourns the loss of a major figure. The climber and filmmaker David Brashears died at his home in Massachusetts last week. He was 68. Brashears summited Everest 5 times, most notably for his 1998 IMAX film, which showcased both the beauty and the danger of the mountain. The danger and the beauty of Everest are also at the heart of our next guest's debut novel. It's called Dixon Descending, and author Karen Uten joins us now. Welcome. It's great to speak with you.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
We're glad to have you. And this book is about two brothers who try to ascend the most famous mountain in the world. Neither of them are professional climbers. I'm curious what drew you to Everest.
You know, it's so funny. I feel like Everest chose me. I am not a climber. I am not a hiker. I'm not particularly athletic. But I think I was first mesmerized by Mount Everest in 1996 when, you know, there was the famous disaster on Everest that led to Into Thin Air and the Everest IMAX movie. And then fast forward to about 15 years ago when this character kind of appeared to me and I saw him standing. I could tell something had happened to him. He was gaunt. He looked bruised. He was limping. And as I started to explore the character, I realized he'd come back from Mount Everest. And I think I was as shocked as he was about that.
Fascinating. Well, let's talk more about this character. His name is Dixon. He's this former champion runner, great athlete. He just barely missed making the U.S. Olympic team by just fractions of a second. But actually, it's his brother, Nate, who pulls Dixon into this idea of climbing Mount Everest. Talk about that relationship between these two men and how that brought them to the mountain.
Yeah, I discovered as I was writing it that this was really about the story of these two brothers, the push and pull between them, the one who is the good son versus the one who is more daring, even though in many respects he's still a good son. But they compete, they champion one another back and forth, and Nate is kind of a seducer. And he's able to say to Dixon, you know, we could do this, knowing that Dixon will get the bug in that way that he used to have it when he was a runner.
One of the ways that Nate seduces Dixon is by saying, hey, come on, man, we could be the first Black American men to ever summit Mount Everest. And in fact, you know, thousands of people have gotten to the top of this mountain, only a tiny fraction of them in real life are Black.
That's right.
I wonder how that drove you.
You know, it definitely was part of what I was thinking of. And I think the way that it played into it for me was you don't think of Black athletes as being climbers. And there have been so few of them. But it also was something that not only wasn't there precedent for in a particular way, but it's not something that typically happens in the community, so it becomes part of the story that the community is also saying, wait a minute, their friends, their family, they're saying, you're doing what? We don't do this. And it takes a real sacrifice for Dixon to put his own desires first, to do the most outrageous thing he can think of. And in so many ways, the book, both on the mountain and back on Earth, as I think of it, is about what happens when you do something audacious, and what is your responsibility afterwards?
I think there is a question that could be asked. Were these men prepared to do something like this? They paid a lot of money. There are actual guided tours up Everest. They've gotten a lot of criticism in the past because they might take on clients who are ill-prepared for this task. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that is a part of this book. You take it head on. Do you think it's a problem?
Yeah, that's interesting. A problem. I think that definitely what I learned is that there are alpinists and there are clients. And the alpinists are these people who climb relentlessly all the time. Those are the people I interviewed who said to me things like, we're looking for a good experience of the mountain. We know that maybe a third of the time we won't get to the summit. That's okay, because there's going to be another mountain and we're going to come back. And they are the people who are not spending $65,000 or more to join the expedition. So the difference then becomes that the clients tend to be the people whose photos we see when they're in these long snaking lines going up to Everest and they're stopped. And it's not that they aren't trained, because many of them are trained, but they are not people who spend their lives climbing mountains constantly. And each mountain is so different and teaches you something so different about yourself that it's easy to find you are not prepared even when you think you are.
I don't want to give away any spoilers. I want people to read the book, but it's fairly soon in this novel that we meet Dixon. He's attempted Everest, and it's clear that something terrible has happened on that mountain. His whole understanding of who he is physically and emotionally has changed. And even the title of your book, it reminds us that we hear a lot of stories about people who are going up the mountain, but it's often what happens to them once they're down, back on Earth, as you say, that's far more complicated. Do you see it that way?
Absolutely. And from the beginning, I think I saw it that way. I mean, it was telling that my first vision of him would be after the climb. And I thought about the 50th anniversary of the astronauts landing on the moon. That happened while I was writing this. And how much there had been in 1968 about the triumph and how little about the aftermath. And now 50 years later, they tell us the truth about the depression that happened afterwards. You know, you've done this most audacious thing. You have done something that few other people have done. And what does that do to you? What does that change about who you are? And I think what really happens for Dixon is that being on the mountain changes his sense of self. He discovers things about himself. And coming back down, he's descending from his lofty idea of who he is. So his interactions when he gets home are different. He is a school psychologist charged with taking care of young boys, and he's not able to do it the same way he did. And he fails some children. That would not have happened, arguably, if he had not gone to the mountain.
Dixon wants this mountain so badly. We all have something we desperately want. And over and over again, you remind us in this book that the more we desire something, the more it will hurt us.
Wow. That's profound. Yeah.
Well, I feel like that, but you wrote that essentially. You know, to my mind, that's what you were telling us over and over again.
Well, certainly the more it will change us, the more you want something, the more you have to give something up, and the more you have to reckon with the self you become. Dixon ends up having to wrestle with, what is my responsibility to those around me? Who can and cannot be saved? And that is something that echoes for him back on Earth in ways that he had not imagined.
What I loved about the book was these depictions of love between brothers, between friends, between mentors and teachers at the school. And in fact, in your acknowledgments, you thank your cousins who you say showed you how Black men care for, laugh, champion, and love one another. Tell me about that and how these cousins of yours inspired you to write this.
You know, in many ways, that was the biggest surprise. I'm still sort of unpacking that, because I had never written in the voice of a man before. And once I understood that was going to be the story, I then decided, okay, I want to get this right. So I started spending time talking to my cousins, emailing them, calling them on the phone, remembering stories from our childhood. And there was a way in which I thought they loved each other in such a perfect way that it was allowed to be imperfect. There was competition, but there was support, all of that. And I really thought it was important that I brought that to this book. Yeah.
Before we started, I mentioned that this is your debut novel. So first of all, congratulations. But
thank you.
Also, may I, you're in your 60s, I believe.
And yes, I am.
May I ask what that was like to have your first novel published at that point in your life? It must have been an Everest in its own right.
It's funny because I have friends who say, you know, this is a perfect metaphor. And it really never occurred to me.
Really? I've still felt good, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been writing forever. And in fact, I published my first short story in Essence magazine 40 years ago. So I've been writing short fiction and essays and publishing them and, you know, have written some other novels that did not see the light of day or come out into the world. So there is this amazing, immense satisfaction. And what I've loved in the last year and a half is how many women I have met who are over 60 and who published their first book and who, like me, have been writing forever. So I love that we persevered. And I think if there's anything that's the difference between whether or not you make it or not is so much about, can you stick with it? I mean, sticking with it for 40 years is, you know, that's a long time to be an emerging writer. But I did it. And I'm as stunned as everyone else that I did it, but I'm really happy.
Karen Utten has made it to the summit. Congratulations. The new book is called Dixon Descending. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.